Catra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Catra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are diving into, well, just a monumental book. It's Lawrence Wright's Pulitzer Prize winning The Looming Tower, Al-Qaeda and the Road to 9/11.
Yeah, and it's so much more than just a history book, isn't it? It's this incredibly detailed look at how arguably the biggest intelligence failure in modern American history actually happened.
Right.
Wright's core point is that 9/11 wasn't just some random unpredictable event.
No, not a bolt from the blue at all. His argument is really powerful and frankly quite sobering. He says the attacks were, well, almost the inevitable result of decades of ideological buildup crashing into these really catastrophic systemic failures and preventable failures. That's the key part.
Absolutely. It makes you confront this uncomfortable idea that the threat wasn't new. Its roots go back decades, you know, starting with ideas, abstract concepts, political grievances way over there, and ending in just absolute disaster here.
It really feels like the definitive story of how the information needed to stop the attacks.
Hmm.
It wasn't just available, it was sometimes actively ignored or kept siloed.
Exactly.
And the person guiding us through this unbelievably complex story is Lawrence Wright. I mean, he's a name many will know, a longtime staff writer for The New Yorker, just incredibly respected for meticulous reporting.
His authority on this subject is just, it's immense. And it comes from the sheer depth of the work he put in.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking 5 years right in this book.
5 years?
5 years. Traveling all over, using his Arabic language skills, and conducting, get this, over 600 interviews.
Wow, 600.
600. Think about who that includes. Everyone from, you know, high-level, frustrated FBI and CIA officials, right down to sources with deep connections inside Middle Eastern extremist groups. That kind of access is just rare.
It gives the book such weight, doesn't it? But
yeah.
What really makes it, I think, so compelling and why we're diving into it is his skill as a writer, how he tells the story. He actually has a background as a playwright and screenwriter.
And you can feel that. It allows him to do something really crucial. He doesn't just give you a dry timeline of facts and policy mistakes. He weaves it all together into this incredibly gripping, character-driven story.
Yeah.
You see the world through the eyes of the key players, the ideologues, the terrorists themselves, and these dedicated but often so frustrated American agents trying to stop them. He shows how history really comes down to human choices, human flaws, human egos.
Okay, so let's unpack the structure a bit. He builds the book around these two narratives, right?
Uh-huh.
Two tracks running side by side, heading towards this awful collision. What's the first one?
So the first track is mapping the rise of Al-Qaeda itself.
Yeah.
It's a slow burn over decades. Wright goes way back, tracing the ideological roots starting in 1940s Egypt. He follows the lives of these key figures, Sayyid Qutb, Ayman al-Zawahiri, Osama bin Laden, tracking how their ideas and paths developed, especially through things like the Soviet-Afghan War.
Okay, so that's the development of the threat. And the second track?
The second track is happening concurrently, mostly in Washington and New York. It's the story of the American response, or maybe the lack of an effective response from U.S. intelligence, mainly the CIA and the FBI.
Mm.
And it becomes this painful chronicle of institutional blindness and bureaucratic infighting.
Right, it's turf wars.
Exactly. And the core insight, the real tragedy Wright exposes, is that the attacks ultimately succeeded because these two forces intersected. You had this determined, sophisticated, patient enemy meeting a huge American defense system that was fatally fragmented, just consumed by these internal rivalries.
And that's the title, right? The Looming Tower. It's the World Trade Center, obviously, but it's also kind of a metaphor for the whole structure of Western power and its intelligence agencies. Tall, maybe impressive, but ultimately fragile and blindsided because they underestimated the enemy and, maybe even more importantly, they distrusted each other.
Precisely. A structure with critical weaknesses hidden inside.
So let's dig into that first track, the ideology, because Wright makes such a strong case that you can't understand the violence without understanding the ideas driving it. And it really starts with Sayyid Qutb, doesn't it? This Egyptian intellectual.
Yeah, Qutb is foundational. He was sent to the U.S. back in the late 1940s, believe it or not, to study the American education system.
Right.
But his actual experience here just profoundly repulsed him, right? Really details this, how Qutb was just shocked by what he saw as American materialism, the secularism, the mixing of sexes. There's that famous story about him being horrified at a church social in Greeley, Colorado.
The dance,
yeah. He saw it as like spiritual emptiness, moral decay.
Wow. And that experience, that cultural revulsion, it directly fed into his major writings like Milestones, which essentially laid out the theological justification for violent jihad, not just against the West, but against Muslim governments he saw as corrupted or apostate.
Exactly. It provided the intellectual framework. And then that abstract ideology gets its organizational muscle from Ayman al-Zawahiri, the Egyptian doctor.
Yeah.
Wright explains how Zawahiri's own experience, particularly being tortured in an Egyptian prison, just cemented his commitment to violent revolution. He became the disciplined operational mind that al-Qaeda really needed.
Okay, so Qutaib's the ideas, Zawahiri is the organizer, and then comes bin Laden.
Right. Osama bin Laden brought the resources, the money, but also the strategic vision and charisma. He starts as this wealthy Saudi guy volunteering against the Soviets in Afghanistan. But the turning point, Wright argues, was the Gulf War. Seeing U.S. troops stationed in Saudi Arabia, that just enraged him.
That was the break point.
That was the break. It fueled his split with the Saudi monarchy, and that's when he really declared war specifically on the United States.
And the Soviet-Afghan War in the 80s, that was like the incubator for all this.
Absolutely crucial. Wright shows how the CIA, thinking very short-term strategically, poured money and weapons into supporting the Mujahideen against the Soviets. But the unintended consequence, they basically created this massive international training camp. It drew in thousands of foreign fighters, radicalized them, gave them real battlefield experience, experience they later turned directly against the U.S. and its allies. It's just the ultimate example of blowback.
Okay, let's shift to that second track then, the American side, which honestly reading it is just frustrating. If this threat was growing, who was the person really sounding the alarm?
That would be John O'Neill. He's almost the tragic hero of Wright's story, this brilliant FBI counterterrorism chief. Obsessive, driven, definitely flawed. But he understood the scale of the bin Laden threat way before most people in power did. He was relentless, like Ahab chasing his whale.
And Wright follows his investigations, right? The embassy bombings in 98, the USS Cole attack in 2000.
Yeah, O'Neill was driving those investigations hard. But the book just lays bare how his efforts were constantly blocked, not really by the terrorists being super elusive, but by politics and turf wars right there in Washington.
Which brings us to maybe the most critical failure point, what Wright calls the wall.
Ah, the wall. Yeah. This was basically the barrier, both legal and cultural, separating the CIA and the FBI. It's like, imagine two different doctors treating the same patient, but refusing to share the patient's chart because one is worried the other might use the information in a way they don't approve of, even if it kills the patient.
So the CIA, focused on foreign intelligence, was terrified that if they gave sensitive information to the FBI,
the FBI would use it for criminal cases, for prosecutions, and that might expose the CIA's sources or methods in court. So they hoarded information. It was presented as protecting assets, but the result was paralysis.
And that hoarding, that led to the single most catastrophic specific failure the book details.
It did. Right. Lays it out chillingly.
Yeah.
In early 2000, the CIA knew that known al-Qaeda operatives, specifically Khalid al-Midhar and Nawaf al-Hazmi, two guys who would later be on the 9/11 planes, were actually inside the United States. They knew they had valid U.S. visas.
They knew they were here.
And they didn't tell the FBI. It's almost unbelievable. They just failed to pass that information across the wall. So for nearly a year and a half, two of the future hijackers were living openly in the U.S., going to flight schools, moving around, while the FBI, the agency that could have tracked them domestically, was completely in the dark.
That rivalry, that dysfunction, it's just staggering. And the end of O'Neill's story is just the ultimate devastating irony, isn't it?
It's heartbreaking. He got so worn down, so undermined by the bureaucracy, he finally resigned from the FBI just weeks before 9/11, took a new job, head of security.
At the World Trade Center.
At the World Trade Center. He died there on 9/11, helping people evacuate. Wright uses his life and death almost as a symbol for the whole story. The guy who saw the threat clearest was ultimately killed because the system failed to listen. Reading that part, it's just crushing.
Yeah. Stepping back from the details, that whole theme of institutional dysfunction, it feels like one of the biggest takeaways. And it applies way beyond just national security, doesn't it? Wright says the failure wasn't just about missing data points. It was a problem of culture.
Exactly. That's such a key quote. The lesson is that bureaucratic infighting, protecting your turf, what you might call, you know, organizational ego, it can fatally undermine any shared mission. It shows that the attitudes, the relationships between parts of an organization often matter way more than the org chart itself.
And we also see the terrible cost of those unintended consequences we mentioned, like U.S. policy in Afghanistan creating the very fighters who attacked us later. It's a stark reminder for policymakers to think beyond the immediate goal, right? Consider the long-term ripple effects.
Definitely. And that ties into another big theme, cultural myopia. The American agencies just repeatedly fail to really understand the context, the culture, the religion, the politics of the enemy they were facing.
They dismissed the ideology.
Yeah, they kind of dismissed it as just irrational noise, underestimated bin Laden's appeal and his strategic thinking. Wright makes a powerful case that cultural competence, actually understanding your adversary's worldview, isn't some soft skill. It's a fundamental security requirement. Ideas really do matter.
The book is full of lines that just stick with you, that really encapsulate these huge ideas. Let's maybe touch on a few of those key paraphrased messages.
Okay. Well, that institutional critique we just mentioned is powerful. The failure to share intelligence was not a problem of structure, but of culture. That just nails the internal problem, the pride and ego getting in the way.
And then there's that observation about American awareness, or lack thereof, in the late 90s. Bin Laden had declared war on America, but America didn't seem to notice. It speaks to a kind of complacency, a failure to grasp the seriousness of the threat, even when it was stated openly.
Yeah, the intent was clear, but it wasn't taken seriously enough. Then you have the root of the ideology, framed from Quat Bob's view. Quat Bob viewed America not as a beacon of freedom, but as a spiritually hollow society obsessed with material goods. Understanding that deep cultural rejection is key to understanding the motivation.
Right, it wasn't just politics. And finally, you have O'Neill's warning, the one that went unheeded. All the chatter points to a spectacular attack inside the United States. The information was there. The dots existed. The system just failed to connect them or act on them. That's damning.
Utterly damning. So thinking about what this means for us now outside of government intelligence circles, the applications feel pretty direct, don't they? It's about organizational health and awareness.
Yeah, for anyone leading any kind of organization, business, nonprofit, whatever, the book is almost like required reading on the dangers of silos. Break them down. That's the message. Focus on the shared mission, not just your department's metrics. Reward people for sharing information across teams.
And for citizens, for leaders trying to navigate today's world, the lesson is about avoiding that short-term thinking crap. We have to invest in deep cultural understanding languages, history, to really grasp modern threats, especially asymmetric ones. If you don't understand the why behind an adversary's actions, you can't predict the what or how.
And maybe for all of us, just as readers, it's a powerful reminder that huge historical events often hinge on very human flaws, pride, ego, turf battles, stubbornness, and that big systemic failures are often the sum of lots of small individual failures to communicate and cooperate. It kind of encourages you to think critically about power structures everywhere.
For me, what really stands out after revisiting this is the sheer depth of that ideological conviction Wright documents. It's a stark reminder that ideas, even abstract ones, can drive people to extraordinary lengths. And underestimating the power of an opponent's belief system, that's maybe the biggest vulnerability of all.
Yeah, I agree. And for me, it always comes back to that terrible irony of John O'Neill. His fate just crystallizes the core message of the Liming Tower. 9/11 wasn't destiny. It was a tragedy born from very human errors, from institutional pride, and just a fatal lack of cooperation. And that feels like such a timeless lesson, doesn't it, for dealing with any complex, determined threat we face today, whether it's terrorism or something else entirely.
Absolutely. That ability to connect information, to work together across divides, it's probably our most critical defense against whatever dangers the world throws at us.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.